And welcome back to the Book and Life podcast. Today we're going to have a brand new book guest on. Whether they're an author, an editor, a producer, you'll never quite know, so you're in for one hell of a ride. But today I just have to do the adverts and then I'll get us straight into that most important conversation. And as we do every week, I'm going to read The Shadow, which is part of the Time Guardian series, and this is book 4 from Marianne Curley. The battle is over, the war is won. The prophecy complete, but life can't just pick up where it left off for Ethan. Struggling to cope with tragic loss, at odds with friends in the guard, he finds himself adrift, jumping in shadows and sensing someone who can't possibly be there. Blaming herself for the goddess Athena's death, Giselle swears revenge to fulfill the immortal's plan for world domination. But Giselle hadn't planned on love, and that leaves her with an unbearable choice. Should she follow her heart or the strings of a goddess short on praise but high on expectation, who continues to pull her from the grave? As the guard and the order battle through the past and into an impossible future, darkness looks around every corner. The fight for the world's survival rests with just one. Is it friend or foe who stands in the shadow? And just a reminder that The Price of Freedom by Rosemary Rowan, is being donated to the Ukraine refugee crisis. And here's the blurb for her book. It's one of her Roman British crime series, which was written under her maiden name. All editions can be found online where all books are sold, even her agents donating her commission. Sorry, I don't have the blurb for that, but that's what she's doing. And now, without further ado, let's get you to the guests.
And welcome back to the Book and Life podcast, guys. I am super excited to have this guest on today. She has been worth the wait in coming, and her book certainly looks phenomenally good. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to our author for this week, Julie Swanson. Welcome.
Hi, Crystal. Thanks for having me.
No, it honestly, it's been an honor. I reached out to you last spring, and I was like, oh, I really want to have her on, and then, you know, luckily we figured it out, and we've got you on now. So tell us about your latest book, and what is it that inspired it for you?
We're talking about Going for the Record, right? I have other books that I've written but not published. Going for the Record, well, a couple of things inspired it. At the time, my dad was dying, and he was dying of cancer, and So I'm a big journaler. So I was journaling all about it. And I was also attending, you know, the children's magazine. I'm not sure if you have it in Scotland. It's called Highlights Magazine for Children. We have it in a lot of dentists and doctors' offices.
Oh, right.
It has hidden pictures and things like that in it.
Yeah.
They have a writer's workshop every summer in New York, in Chautauqua. And I went to that, and I met one of their editors there who had just written a sports novel. Actually, might have been his third sports novel. And I have a big sports background, too. I played 3 different sports in high school, and I played basketball in college, and I coached when I got out of college. And so, and my husband is a soccer coach. I guess you guys call it football. I have a big athletic background, and I was talking to him, and I was writing middle grade and young adult novels at the time, and he said to me, my editor is really looking for someone who can write an authentic sounding girl's sports story that most of the people who write them sound like they've never played, and so therefore the action and scenes and all that just don't ring true. So he said, have you ever thought about writing something? And I'm like, have I thought about it? Like, I've already started several. And he said, well, if you want to, I will help mentor you. And his name was Rich Wallace. He said, I will help mentor you, and you can send me the manuscript along the way, and hopefully we can get it in a shape where we can send it to my editor. His editor was at Viking Penguin, Putnam Penguin, which is one of the big five in New York.
Yeah, it is.
And
yeah.
So I felt really lucky that he offered to do that for me. And I immediately knew which of the stories I wanted to write because my husband had a player of his have her father dying of cancer. And I was fascinated by how she reacted because her dad died. He got diagnosed with cancer and then 2 weeks later he was dead. And I think that would have blown my world and I probably would have needed to take time off. And it was right during the middle of her soccer season. But she just came right back and wanted to win one for the Gipper and play hard for her dad and honor him. And so she did that. And I was like, wow, I can't believe she can do that. That's amazing. I think I would want to be back with my family and my mom. And then I also had a friend in high school who had kind of her reaction to her dad was total. Her dad died when she was a freshman in college playing basketball.
Wow.
And she all of a sudden could have cared less about basketball or sports. She was thinking about the grand scheme of things in the big picture. And she thought, this is so stupid. And she really thought about quitting and leaving college. And she just couldn't get her heart into it because she was so preoccupied with her dad and her family and everything. So I had these two contrasting young athletes who had dealt with the way their dad died in a totally different way. Both their dads died during their season. One of them chose to keep playing really hard and play for her dad and could focus. And the other one had a really hard time continuing because it seemed unimportant after the death of her dad. So my dad was dying at the time. And I thought, I'm going to write a sports story based on my dad dying like he is now. Me going through what those girls went through back when I was playing. And so I kind of imagined how I would have coped, which is, and so that was the inspiration for the story. And the other inspiration for the story was just that my dad's death was plain old inspirational. He was amazing. He was kind of an Archie Bunker type guy, a little cranky and, you know, and I think we all thought when he got diagnosed with cancer, oh, wow, he's going to be the world's worst patient. You know, he's going to
be hard. Yeah.
But he wasn't. He was amazing. Like, it just really it changed him. And he was really inspirational all through his dying and his final weeks and everything. So that's what inspired me to write the book, is I wanted to share all that. And kind of it was cathartic for me, too. You know, I was exploring his death and how I would have dealt with it as a young person. And I think I probably did have a little bit of guilt with, like, my one friend was a little bit guilty about how her dad or her family's whole life had centered around her sport. And so I imagined, you know, that if I didn't make myself a basketball, I didn't make the main character of the book be a basketball player. I made her be a soccer player.
Yeah. 'Cause
that's what my husband coaches. And this guy who was mentoring me said, if you pick an athlete for your first book, at least for sure, pick a different sport than what your favorite sport was, because you'll be able to fictionalize it better. So
that's true. Yeah.
So I worked on that with him back and forth until he thought it was in shape to share with his editor. And I did share it with her and she liked it, but not enough to publish it. And she sent me the world's most amazing rejection letter.
I've had a few of those from the big ones too.
Yeah, it was like 3 pages long and really encouraging and telling me what she liked about it and what she didn't like about it. And so I took that letter and I fixed it up and I sent it out again. And another big publisher was interested in it, but they didn't end up taking it because the editor who I was working with, her mom was dying of cancer. Was diagnosed with cancer while we were working on it. And I don't know if this is true or not. It could have just been a way out for her. Maybe she just didn't want to. But she said it was too hard for her to work on it with her mom dying of cancer. So I was kind of discouraged. And I was like a year into a revision with her. And we were about to move from California across the country here to Virginia. So I got really fed up and I just shoved it in my drawer and said, when I'm done moving and unpacked and everything, I'll look at it again and see what I can do with it. And so that's what I did. And when I got settled enough that I could think about it again, I took it out. And it was amazing the distance, the couple months made me see it all fresh. And I I was like, I can't believe she wanted me to do this. This is so wrong. Like, I went back to what my gut told me to do with the story, where I had
always
been kind
follow
of,
your gut. Yep.
I'd been jumping through hoops to try to do
a
what this
her,
big,
yeah.
big publisher wanted, a big editor wanted me to do, you know, which you figure they know. I'm just a little beginner. What do I know? And I largely put it back. I did the things that I agreed with, you know, I made the changes that I thought she was right on, but I put it back more the way that I thought it should be. And I sent it out to a smaller publisher called Erdmans. They're in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
And they also have, I think in Cambridge or something, they have a...
Yeah.
They're started out in biblical translations and a lot of that kind of thing. But now they do children's and all kinds of things. And they accepted it. And that was the story of that.
That's amazing, because I went from a similar journey for you, where I had options to do something with a big publisher, and then turned out my story actually was too close to theirs, to one something they'd already published, or at least they felt it was. And they gave me this really beautiful letter of, we're really sorry, we can't touch it, we can't go forward with it. But I went indie. I found my way into an independent publisher, and I've never looked back, because the independence has given me such freedom. I can write any genre I want. So if I'm feeling criminally mad and wanting to destroy things, I can go write crime for the day. Or if I'm feeling a hopeless romantic and I want to write one of the most gooeyest romantic stories possible, I'll go into romance. Or I'll go write young adult fantasy, or, you know, whatever the mood takes me. And I think that's what's different now, and I think I said this last week on the show, is seeing how far this industry's come. Like, those 2 months you took a break and you were like, oh, I'm done. But then having that 2 months, you were able to go, ha, okay, I see where this is going. I see what I need to do with it. Why didn't I trust my gut in the first place? And having that reassurance in your gut was maybe what you needed to kind of push the story to where it needed to go. And I think that's like something I say to a lot of writers. They'll come to me and say, oh my gosh, you've done this 12, 13 years. How? And I say, because I trust my gut. Even if a publisher says to me, or an agent says to me, oh, if you do this, 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 and this, it'll be the most amazing piece ever. I don't do it unless it feels right. Unless my
gut. And sometimes, don't you find like, right away when they tell you what you need to do, mostly my reaction is, no way, that's so wrong, that's so stupid. But if you sit on it, some of those things that you reacted so strongly and negatively to, some of them, when you really think about it, you're like, okay, that now
yeah,
I
that
can see
sense.
I've had a chance to think about it, and I've thought about how I could do that. And but some of them you're still like, no, that's just wrong. So it's like your initial reaction isn't always right, but if you read it, let it sit a bit, and then think about it, then that reaction, I think, is right.
Yeah, and what I always say to people is, when you get your edits back and you get your notes back, read them, shelf it, go do something else, whether it's painting, housework, dishes, whatever it is that you can just walk completely away from your computer. Give yourself an hour to 2 hours. Let it sink in. Make yourself a copy, or have a conversation with somebody that is nothing to do with the industry, because the worst thing you can do is sit with somebody in the industry and let it sink in, because 9 out of 10, a lot of the stuff that they'll come to you is very logical, or there are things that they haven't picked up on, or things that haven't made sense to them. And to be able to sit and have that time can sometimes say, okay, I maybe didn't explain this part of the story well enough. How can I go about putting it in such a way that it flows better and it's easily understood? But it took me a really long time to get my head and my brain into that space, into that mindset of, what is it that I need to do as a writer, as a producer of creative worlds, to help the reader fully explore and fully fall in love with this world and get the most out of it? Because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are parting with their really hard-earned money to experience what we're creating. You know, we're selling an experience, we're selling memories, we're selling dreams, we're selling hope. And that's that's why I listen to the editor, but then I also listen to my gut and I try and balance out the two.
Yeah. And I think when you're younger, that's harder to do, you know, when you're in your 20s and your 30s, you figure, well, they're so experienced and I don't know anything, so I should trust them. And you're sort of so wowed by, and feel so lucky that you have somebody big interested that you figure, oh, I don't want to be known as difficult. You know, I don't want to get that reputation that I'm not open to ideas and stuff like that. So I think when you're younger, you do things, you don't trust your gut quite as much because you figure other people have more experience than you. And then as you get a little bit older, you're
I think life experience does play into it in a big way. If you've not lived a lot of life, it is harder for you to have a gut that you trust. Whereas I've been lucky. I've lived an exceptionally crazy life. I'm only 35, but I've lived that crazy lifestyle. I've lived the knowledge and experience to say, okay, I need to trust my gut because this is what would actually happen if I didn't. And, you know, you go through the heartbreaks and you go through the life experiences. And as a writer, the more that you experience and the more you feel and the more you do things, the more you're going to be able to put into your work and the more you're going to connect with an audience worldwide compared to a select few that might have lived the same lifestyle as yourself. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're going through a painful period in your life, maybe not think of it as the negative thing. Oh, I'm going through this really bad time. Try and think about it as, well, if I can save these feelings and I can find a story that explains what this was like for me, then maybe I'll connect to somebody and they will then be able to experience that for themselves. And I think that's a great gift a writer can give to anybody in the world.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's so true. You know, sometimes when you're in those things, you feel very alone in them because you don't know anyone else is going through that. So after you're through it, you know, I can't be the only one. There are other people who could benefit from knowing they're not alone in it. And I thought that about, you know, I also felt like in my dad's death, I learned some things that helped me cope or that comforted me or that just things that he did that inspired me. And they were things that I wanted to share. And so, writing is about that sharing and making people not feel like they're alone. Also about entertaining, you know, if you're writing fantasy or romance or stuff like that. Yeah.
And so what are you reading at the moment that's getting you excited? Is there any books that you're reading? Because as writers, we all read. It's kind of like a thing that's drummed into us from day one is read, 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 read. So what are you reading that you're excited about right now?
Well, right now I'm about to query a bunch of agents and they all want comp titles. And I have one really good comp title, but I can't find another one that I think is right. So I have this huge stack of books that I've ordered that I'm reading, and I really research them by, you know, the theme of them or whatever, hoping that, yes, this one will be something that I feel like I can really compare my book to. So this current book that I'm working on has to do with how the main character. Again, I tend to always write books based on some life experience of mine. And it's kind of funny because I used to, everyone in my writer's group is not like that, you know. And so one woman in my writer's group used to say, oh, let me guess, is this one about you? When you were younger. Yep. And I'm I'm not apologizing. Like, I'm writing from my own experience. But anyway, the one I'm writing now is a really important book to me. It's actually the first book I worked on. And it's so important to me that I want to get it right. So I've been working on it for like 30 years. And it's like that book you have to write before you die. And it's kind of a story about a girl who hated being a girl. And, which is true. When I was a girl, I hated being a girl. I had two older brothers and we lived in a very rural woodsy area where there was so much fun stuff to do. And I just loved everything boy and boyish and wanted to be, and grew up in this culture and this family that was, you know, kind of sexist and patriarchal. And
There's always yeah. one. Yep.
So I had a hard time being a girl, and I got this doll one Christmas, and I don't know what possessed me. I wasn't conscious of what I was doing, but I gave it a haircut and I sewed it boy's clothes and I gave it a boy's name, and it was like a ventriloquist dummy. I would make him talk and he really would say everything that I wanted to say. And I was really boring and shy and quiet and timid and meek. And he was loud and funny and brave and all the things that I wanted to be and wasn't. And my family got such a kick out of him that they played along with it. And over the years, not everybody, my brothers refused to, but
always a brother. Yeah.
But my mom, my dad, my sister, and my cousin, they all played along and ended up calling me by his name a lot of times instead of my own name. And I didn't even think it was weird. I just, because it happened slowly and evolved and it was funny and everyone enjoyed it. Like now, probably when someone would send me to therapy, you know, they'd go, oh, this girl's.
Yeah, I don't think they would. I think nowadays we're more open-minded and kind of see more of the situation and the picture than we would, you know, back in.
Back then you didn't talk about it at all.
Yeah, whereas and, I think there would be a conversation about it now, but it wouldn't be, hey, let's get some therapy. No, I mean, okay, let's have a conversation about it and then see where it takes us from there. Kind of
just situation. With your parent or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was weird at all until I got married in my 20s and I would go home for holidays or vacations or whatever. And my mom or my dad or my sister would be calling me by this boy's name and I would be talking back in this funny little voice. Because over the years, I sort of shed the doll and it just became this other little voice I use. Yeah. And I don't know why I still can't be funny unless I talk in that voice. And I still can't really talk in that voice around anyone but my sister and my mom now. My dad is gone. But when I married my husband, I was really self-conscious of it when he would be around my family and they'd call me that name and I'd be like, he must think I'm crazy. And so I stopped being him.
Yeah.
And that's when I got really curious about it. And I was like, what was that? You know, and so I would have given anything to go to a therapist and ask him what that was and talk to him about it and just sort
never
of figure it out. And I did end up much later doing that. And it was fascinating to learn, you know, what someone would consider that. And but that's the story that I'm working on now. And I forgot your question. I forgot the question that started.
It's okay. I asked you what you were excited about reading.
Oh, so I'm reading books about gender stuff, tomboys, kids who have alter egos, kids who grow up with a little bit of either misogyny or sexism or emotional abuse, you know, stuff like that, because sometimes I think it might have been that. And I'm reading all those different books and seeing if I think I've read through every tomboy gender book, LGBTQ book there is in the world for middle grade and young adults. So now I'm looking at the other ones more having to do with them. Did you ever watch Nickelodeon?
Yes, I did. It was huge.
Did you ever watch Victorious?
Yes, we did. Yeah. My brother liked that one a lot.
I guess there's a character named Rex Powers. He was the dummy, a ventriloquist dummy. And so I'm thinking if I can't find a comp title, maybe I'll use Rex Powers from Victorious as like an example from cult. You know, they say you can use TVs but that's kind of an old one. You know what I mean? I think that stopped in 2013. So I'd like to find something newer, but he's my last resort, Rex Powers, in explaining.
Yeah, I think
what
that's
this
a good one, to be honest.
Do you think it is?
Yeah, I do. And
you think a lot of people know that?
I don't think people will instantly recognize it, but I think when they start reading,
they could look it up.
Yeah, they'll look it up as they're reading the book because they'll become curious about it, and it will be something that they'll look up and they'll go, "Oh yeah!" And then it'll click for them, because there's probably more people out there that's watched it than what they realize. Because a lot of parents used to just stick Nickelodeon on and stick in front of it, and you didn't always pay attention to which show was starting or which show was ending, because you were usually doing homework or eating your dinner or you know, you're getting distracted for whatever reason. So I think it will connect with so many in that
regard.
I'm
glad to hear you think that. Maybe I can use it.
There you go. See? But no, like it's funny you were talking about sort of growing up and not knowing, you know, not liking what you wear and trying to understand that. Because what was one of the things that I took from my series called Marie's World is I took
It's called what?
Marie's World.
Marie, the girl's name Marie?
Yeah,
Okay.
Marie's World. And it's twin sisters. So you've got the overly girly sister who's the apple of dad's eye and gets all the attention and everything else. And then you've got Marie, who's this kind of out there, does the big sister protection thing, but they're twins. So there's kind of that little bit of conflict between them. And Marie's never felt like she's fitted in anywhere. She's constantly searching for this sense of belonging. And when her dad abandons her and her twin sister on this Anne in Aberdeen, then the twins change. So Layla becomes more dependent on Marie, but when Marie becomes famous and Layla gets left behind, she lashes out in the only way she knows how, and she exposes her sister's diaries to the world. And exposes the family, like a lot of the family secrets, like, hey, mom was pregnant and she drank herself to death, and dad was on the road and lied to us our entire lives. We didn't know he was a wrestler, and why did he do this to us, and why did he leave us this gigantic hole that we'd never understood? And that was, it was almost a story that we took and we built it from each character's point of view. So it's like a spider web. So when you've read Marie's, you get to read Amber, you get to read Charlie, you get to read all the main characters' little stories. And it gives you that kind of almost 4D, 3D world that you get encased in. And once you start, unfortunately, it's hard to stop from what I'm told, but you get into it and it's, you almost want to slap Marie in a way because you're like, oh, would you just wake up and realize your twin sister is a nut job? You know, like you just want to like strangle her a little bit. And then Layla, you're just like, God, how's this girl still alive? Like, how has nobody smacked sense into her yet? Like, but you get different emotions from every character. And I think growing up the way I did, I grew up in a hospital. I grew up in situations with many different kids around me with many different personalities, and it was almost like recreating that environment of all of us working towards a common goal, which was to get better and to get home. But in this sense, we did it in a dance aspect of they're trying to work together and push each other to achieve the best in dancing and achieve the best in their careers and in solving the mysteries of their lives they've never understood. And Maria is very much the tomboy where she's got the black trousers and she's got the heavy boots and she's like, I don't care, I'm gonna wear a fleece thermal jumper today because I feel like it. I don't want to wear a crop top because guess what, I'll get cold. And she's kind of that more down to earth one, whereas Layla's skipping around in the summer dress and little heels and it's like -2 outside and she doesn't care. So
Yeah.
it gives you that kind of how two people can be so different and how
Yeah.
they can take completely different paths. And
Yeah.
I think it might be one that you might connect with. It might help, you know, with that what you're
And
doing
is
now.
that a book that you've got published?
Yeah, that's out right now. Yeah. And
Marie's
it's an
World.
incredible series. We're 6 books in out of 32.
Wow.
Why I agreed to 32, I don't
32.
know. Yeah.
Yeah,
That way, it seemed like a good idea at the beginning. And now that I'm 6, 7 books in, I'm like, oh, geez. No,
that's a
is that
lot.
a good idea? This was a really bad idea, Crystal. My husband just rolls his eyes and goes, you never did anything by half. Soon as. I don't know, a year, 3 weeks. So, you know, and especially if I'm in a really hard writing session and I know I'm going to be up at like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, I just crash on the sofa or I'll crash in the spare room and be like, the next day.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing experience. It really is. And to be a part of it, is amazing. And I think one of the things that I keep drumming into a lot of authors is have your breakaway time, have your time where you're not writing and you're not sitting in the story. So like I will go and I'll be, because I'm a hyper social person, I have to have conversations with people and I have to be constantly in conversations with as many different people as I can. So I go into the gaming world, and that has opened up an even wider range of personalities and experiences and people. And that, when you're doing fantasy, you're doing YA, and you're doing young, sort of middle-aged or young adult, the amount of influence and inspiration you can get by just being around people like that is absolutely incredible. And I didn't think it would be a useful tool. I thought Discord would be a nightmare and I would quit after a week and I wouldn't like it or whatever. And then I had it for like 6-7 years and I'm like, I'm never going to get off this thing. Like, it's permanent. It's like, oh, okay. And that, I mean, we set up a fantasy server just for the series that we've got coming out later on this year. And people have just flocked to it. And they're like, oh, yeah, we get to read along and we get to experience as it comes out. That was just another platform, another way of fans being able to interact with all of us and to be a part of something that was even bigger. And we have themed game nights and we have all the little things that we do on there. And it's a lot of fun. I've had to learn and adapt to like what our industry is now and how to reach readers and gamers and all these people out there that will pick up this kind of stuff. And this was one of the things that I've learned. And I always say, if you're putting a book out, make sure you research on the best way to reach the people that you need to reach. And
yeah, you're lucky. You're lucky you like to be social, because I tend to be the other way.
I found it for a long time very draining, and I found it very difficult, but I got really, really lucky, and I started to find my feet, and I started to find my confidence. And once I did that, there was no slowing me down. Like my dad was saying, as soon as you had 8 and you realized like where you were going with your social stuff, then he just never saw me. I had a better social life than him. And still to this day, he'll say to me, like, he goes out 3-4 days a week at night, and my mom never sees him. And I used to be out 5 or 6 nights a week, and he would be the one tapping on my door going, I haven't seen you this week. Where have you been? And that, you know, that's a great thing. But at least now with the internet, you don't have to physically go out to have that. You know, I can just open my computer and connect with people all over the world. And I think that's an incredible gift to everybody.
Yeah.
So you've come on the show, you've survived the Book and Life podcast. We've been honored to have you on, and we really can't wait to have you back when you get your new book into the next steps, and when you can come back and announce it and tell us all about it. I know that everybody here will be definitely excited. And so guys, be safe this week while you're doing your stuff. And I will see you all again next Monday for another episode of the Book and Life podcast.